In the first paragraph of chapter 32, St. Thomas uses a word he has not yet used, even once, in his compendium of theology. That word is good. He makes the claim that God is perfect good, and he also says that the good apprehended is necessarily loved. We need to talk just a little bit about the notion of good to make those claims clear. In his Summa Theologiae, St. Thomas devotes an entire question of the Summa to clarifying the word good before he applies that word to God. But here he simply begins using it, counting either on our previous education or on our sound intuitions about the word. But to give you a leg up on Thomas's treatment of God's will in the compendium, I'd like to say a few words about how he understands the word good. If you consult your own intuitions and you ask, what does it mean to say that such and such a thing is good, or that such and such a course of action is good? I think you'll find two ideas swimming around in your mind. But pause this recording for a moment and ask yourself what you mean when you say that something is good, right? Or conversely, if someone proposes either a thing or a course of action or an event to you and you say, oh, that is not good, what do you mean? Have you thought about it? Okay. I suspect that one or both of two ideas are floating around in your head. Good has to do either with what is perfective of a thing or with what is desirable to a thing. Let's talk about perfective. If you say a given course of action, that is not good, you might mean that however desirable it may seem, that course of action, in fact, will not be perfective. It will not make this person a better person. It will not make the people involved better people. Or you might mean that, say, a given food, that is good. It will perfect my body. It will bring health. Or you might, if you say that is not good, you might mean it is the opposite of perfective for my body. Perhaps it is poisonous for my body. Or if you look at a given event, you might say, this event is going to bring everyone into a further stage of perfection. Or you might, if you say this event is not good, you might mean this is going to take us further away from our true selves. This is going to make it harder for us to recover our identity. Perhaps it will be not good for the country. This will take the United States further away from being who the United States should be. Or if it's good for the country, you might mean this is going to help bring about the state of affairs that makes a nation really be a nation. So it's going to be perfective of us. So you might mean by the word good, perfective. Or you might have in mind with the word good, desirable. Right? The good is what looks good to me is what is attractive, what appeals to me, what I desire. You could say that, that wouldn't be good. And you may just mean nothing more than your immediate, oh, that is so unappealing. Or if you say, that looks good, you might mean, I want that. That is the kind of thing I would greatly desire. And it may not be in reference to yourself. You could say, this is good for a dog, meaning a dog would greatly desire this, right? Or you might say, that's not going to be good for that bunny rabbit. And it may be that all you have in mind is the bunny rabbit is going to hate this. Right, so two ideas that might float into our minds. Good could mean what is perfective. Good could mean what is desired. Now, St. Thomas would have us connect those two ideas. In his view, what is truly desired is what is perfective. The complicating factor, of course, is that we are made up of various levels. And so what is perfective at one level may not be perfective at another. So, for example, what brings the sense of sight or the sense of taste into its maximum activity and so is perfective of that particular sense power may actually be destructive of the soul, right? So we end up having to distinguish between things that are ultimately perfective of us and things that are only perfective in some particular aspect. And when we have to make that distinction, we end up saying, well, this appears desirable to you, but really it's not good for you. And what we mean is, if you really take into account how this is perfective and how this is not, in the end, it's not something that you desire or should desire, right? If you are desiring it, it's because you're swept away by the one level at which it is perfective of you, right? A more surface level. At a deeper level, this is not perfective of you. So I think St. Thomas is probably right that when we try to think about the word good, we should bring those two notions together. We should say the good first and foremost means what is desired or what is desirable. But then the explanation for why is something desirable is that it is perfective in some way. Right? So the good is what is perfective. Now, all perfections of all things are found in a supereminent degree in God. And so if what is perfective is ultimately what's desired and therefore what is good, God is going to be simply speaking good. Right? Not good just for you or for the dog, not just for the nation or for the mushroom. God is, simply speaking, good all the time for everyone. He is the source of all perfection. Now, having said that, we need to make one further distinction. Within the word desire, we're going to have to distinguish between goods or perfections that you don't yet have and goods or perfections that you do currently have. All right, so for example, I might greatly desire to be married and have kids. And I might desire that because it is going to make both me and my spouse better human beings, closer to God. It's going to be perfective of both of us. So this is good. It's a common good because it's not just my good. So this is very, very good. And then I get married. Do I now no longer desire my marriage because I have it? Well, if by desire you mean pursue as something not yet present, then I guess that's true. But aren't we all aware that once you are married, there is a clinging to your marriage with rejoicing, with delight, right? Once I have my kids, you can say, I no longer desire to have these kids. Well, only if by desire you mean I don't pine for a family as something I don't yet have, but now that I have my kids, I am contented in them. I hold on to them with delight, right? Or you might, you could say the same thing about any other good or perfection that I have. Right? When I'm young, perhaps I desire to be grown up. Now that I am grown up, do I wish for something else? Well, I mean, there are all kinds of things I wish for, but being grown up, the maturity that I have is something that every day I rest in with delight. Of course, the trick here is that I can always be more mature. So there's always something further that I do want. But the maturity I already have, it's not quite right to say that it's no longer something I want. It's just that because I have it, I can rest in it with delight. Now, for most of us, when we want to think about, wait, do I still want this even though I already have it? What we end up doing is we pose to ourselves the question, what would happen if that were in danger, right? So a sign, for example, that I do rest in my marriage with delight, that I do still want my marriage, is that I take necessary steps to preserve my marriage, right? Because marriages are fragile things. You have to be always acting so as not to lose them. Kids are fragile things. One sign that I do still want my kids is that I take extra precautions to make sure they don't get squished by cars or corrupted by evil people, right? So I discover my ongoing desire for what I already have in the fact that I ward off dangers to the goods that I have. But what about a good that you might have that there is absolutely no danger of your losing? Can you still want it? Can you still desire it? Well, again, not in the sense of something that's absent. And we just said, not in the sense of something that could be taken away from you. But it's still possible to have that relationship, well, maybe not exactly desire, but perhaps of love. To have that relationship of resting in this perfection with delight, to be content in it with a certain, you know, joy. And that is what it means to desire or love the good that is present and cannot be lost. Okay, when St. Thomas says that the good apprehended is necessarily loved, that must be what we're talking about with reference to God. God loves his own absolutely perfect goodness, not as something to be acquired. He is entirely identical with his own goodness. He does not love his own goodness as something that he might lost and so something he might lose and so something he protects. His being is his goodness and his absolutely necessary being, so he can't lose it. But he can rest in it with delight. He can be content in it with joy. And that's what it would mean for God to love his own goodness. Now, one last note on the word good. We have moved seamlessly from created goodness to God's goodness. And you say, whoa, how did we've been so careful about moving words to God. How did we just do that? Well, let's just note that the word good is a transcendental. It's like the word being, which applies across all categories. It's like the word one, right? Which to say something is one can be said in any category of being. It's like the word perfection, which a perfection can be in any category of being, right? This word transcends the categories. And consequently, it's one of the easiest words to use in reference to God. We've already said God is perfect, and since good is tied in with perfection and is equally as transcendental as that word, as transcendental as the word being itself, then we can apply it. Anywhere you have being, to the degree that you have being, you will have unity, and to that same degree, you will have goodness. So this is one of the easier cases, much easier than saying something more concrete like intellect or will, but we can use this easier word, like goodness, to leverage our case that a more concrete word like will must apply to God.